I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. Welcome back to the Ministry of Hemp podcast. I'm your host, Matt Baum, and today on the show, we're going to talk about Kansas. We've highlighted several other states, mainly Colorado, some Texas here and there, a lot of Kentucky, but we don't hear about Kansas very often. So I found the perfect person to check in with. His name is Kelly Ripple. He is the vice president of the Kansas Industrial Hemp Advisory Board. But as you are going to hear in our discussion, he's doing a lot more than that, too. Kelly is a busy guy, and he has been fighting for hemp for years. Really excited for you guys to hear this conversation. But first, let's get just about as far away from Kansas as we can in the United States and talk about California for a moment, specifically Hollywood. You may know him better as Iron Man, but Robert Downey Jr. has just been a part of the first hemp wool installation in a building in the United States. Now, hemp wool is insulation made from hemp, but unlike fiberglass insulation, you can literally just grab it with your hands. No worries, no rashes, it's not gonna get into your skin. It's a lot safer, easier to make, and it's made out of hemp. The building is being turned into a training center for Downey Jr. and undoubtedly other megastars, where they can work out and get pumped up for new roles. It was an old building called Doc Ski and Sports, and they basically rehabbed this building. And Downey Jr. was looking to reduce his carbon footprint by introducing hemp wool into the project. Back in episode 26 of this podcast, I spoke with Maddie Mead from Hempitecture. And Hempitecture was the firm that actually worked on this and helped install the hemp wool. Back in February, the Hempitecture team visited the site of this commercial renovation project on Santa Monica Boulevard in LA, and they worked with Downey's subcontractors, teaching them the tools of the trade to successfully install hemp wool, and they loved it. Apparently, it was super easy to use. Like I said, it doesn't bother anyone's skin, so you don't have to wear weird gloves. You just tack it up, and it does the job. We're going to be hearing a lot more about hemp wool in the near future, I'm sure, because it really is a revolutionary product. And it's fantastic to use a product like this to rehab an old building to offset poor construction in the past with new, improved, and better products that are better for the environment. Check out episode 26 of this podcast to hear more about hempcrete, hemp insulation, and the firm that worked with Robert Downey Jr., Hempitecture. My conversation on the show today is with Kelly Ripple, the vice president of the Kansas Industrial Hemp Advisory Board. But that's not all. He's also worked on the latest Kansas Safe Access Act, SB 187, which they're trying to get onto the ballot right now. That's going to allow patients access medical cannabis through protected administration from licensed medical professionals. And he's also the co-founder of Kansans for Hemp, which is working to pass legislation to reintroduce industrial hemp for Kansas farmers. He's also the business developer for Medicine Man Farms, a Kansas-based CBD company, so he might have more hemp knowledge than anyone I've encountered on this show. Here's my conversation with Kelly Ripple. Kelly, welcome to the Ministry of Hemp podcast. Now, I did a little bit of background digging on you, and you have been neck deep in hemp for a very long time. I gotta know, how does this start? How does a Kansas boy decide, you know what? I'm not so into farming, but I am behind hemp. How did this happen?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course.
And the story goes back to in the early 90s when I was going through middle school and we had DARE class. And I would come home from DARE class.
I remember DARE. I never used drugs again. It totally worked. I never touched them.
Flawless. It's flawless.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I came home and I asked my parents, what do you know about this plant marijuana that we keep hearing about?
Right.
And my dad said, Well, as a matter of fact, I was involved in some research at Kansas State University in the 1970s, which is America's first land-grant university.
Right.
And he said one of the things we studied was the best ways to kill what they thought was marijuana. Come to find out, it was actually hemp.
I was reading about this when I found you. I found this on a Medium. You had written about this. So Kansas had a full-on hemp extermination program, basically, where they were like, who founded this? Was it the farmers? Was it the government? Like, and who carried out the mass extermination?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the government was involved, of course, because at that time, you know, this was the same era that the Controlled Substance Act came out. Right. That was in 1970, of course, but these studies were conducted in the late 60s and early 70s. So it was happening all at the same time. And what I found out in 2017, when I actually uncovered those full text documents at K-State, which are not open access information, those studies were funded by Eli Lilly, which is a global pharmaceutical conglomerate.
Yeah, that's a name that pops up a lot when we start talking about this history.
Yes, and as many people know, they formulated and sold cannabis-derived medical products
in
the early 1900s in the U.S. So they knew benefits. They knew that there were really productive components of the cannabis plant in general, and they did what they could to eliminate that competition. And ultimately, it was really interesting that these studies both. They studied the cannabinoid profiles and how they fluctuate in Kansas over time. They studied the germination rate and the growth cycles over time.
This is pretty groundbreaking stuff. I mean, this was stuff that hadn't been done.
It was early studies. Raphael Mechoulam had not identified THC and synthesized cannabinoids just a few months prior or a few years prior.
Right.
So, It really was groundbreaking. But my father was a volunteer student and he was earning his biology degree and he had farming background. And they strapped canisters of 2,4-D to their backs and walked farmers' plots. And they tried burning, they tried infesting it, they tried insecticides, pesticides, all these different types of chemicals to get. And the things they found out was it comes back.
Yeah, you can't. It's a weed. You can't kill it. So this pharmaceutical company comes to the state of Kansas under the guise of we need to eliminate this horrible menace of a plant, marijuana. It's a nightmare. It ruins lives. It kills everyone. We need you, agriculture college, to come up with a way, an effective way to kill it. And they stuck backpacks on students and sent them out into the fields.
Yeah, which and of course now we know that 2,4-D is it was phased out. I think it is still somewhat in use, but it has been tied to a lot of issues, you know, health concerns and
yeah, it just seems so amazingly irresponsible.
Very much so.
You know, you think about things like thalidomide, which was happening around the same time. So people were aware that there are dangerous chemicals involved here. Was it the state that decided to do this, or the college just went along with it because it was a grant and they were like, sure, let's do this study?
There was a grant involved with it. And yes, and it was from Eli Lilly and company, and and Elanco Manufacturing. Those companies actually still fund research at K-State, and they do likely elsewhere as well. And that was one of the things that I realized when I discovered this information is that this likely is not an isolated incident.
Oh, I'm sure.
There needs to be a concerted effort in trying to identify within each university and archives if these types of studies happened in other states, because if they did, that kind of tells a lot bigger story than what we really know.
That's conspiracy at that point, basically. Full on conspiracy.
The other part of this is these studies were overseen by the Marijuana Control Commission, which was under the guise of Governor Docking at that time in Kansas. And so law enforcement was involved, and there's just a lot of conflicts of interest involved with these studies that wouldn't fly today.
It's funny how that always pops up, isn't it? There's always like an odd conflict of interest. But I agree with you. I find it very hard to believe that there weren't similar studies like this that happened at Nebraska, Missouri, North Dakota State, any of these ag colleges. I bet they were all over the Midwest because that's where this stuff was growing.
Right. And it was very interesting. And like you said, this was some groundbreaking research they did because they mapped where it originated in the northeastern corner along the Missouri River, and it spread throughout the state. I mean, it was some in-depth and comprehensive data that they collected. And Kansas is known for very comprehensive data just in general. So it's pretty fascinating to see this this information.
So let's go back before they started the mass extermination. Why Kansas? Was Kansas a hemp hotbed? Or like I've come to think of Kentucky as the original, you know, hemp producer in the United States. But it sounds like before this, Kansas was producing quite a bit of hemp.
We were. Of course, we had the Hemp for Victory movement, and Kansas farmers were they were encouraged and paid to grow hemp for the war movement during World War II. Prior to that, though, there is a lot of theory, and I'm sure we will, with scientific advancements in genomic testing, that we will be able to identify that cannabis was indigenous to Kansas. We didn't introduce it here.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you about. A lot of these reports, they called it an invasive species and tried to say things like it came from Asia or it came from South America. But there are, I mean, I don't know about hardcore records, but there's definitely records that sound like when colonists came here, Native Americans were already growing hemp. It was here.
Exactly. And they were in South America and in Central America and in what is now Mexico. Though the indigenous peoples there, they were utilizing cannabis for a myriad of purposes and reasons and benefits. And yes, when my understanding is when the Spanish came and settled, quote unquote, settled
in quotes. Yeah.
Right. You know, they introduced hemp, the fibrous variety, because they needed indigenous peoples to grow fibrous varieties for sails and ropes, so they can then ship goods back to Europe and other countries.
Was the whole idea of labeling hemp as invasive, is that just come down to like more of the racist rhetoric that was behind the Marijuana Control Act and stuff, or
that's part of it? My understanding is that yes, anti-immigration and ultimately racism and discrimination, bigotry,
right?
Those were, of course, very strong components of prohibiting cannabis in general. However, as we also know, it's the corporate exclusivity that really forced the laws to change, because we had, of course, William Randolph Hearst, Harry Anslinger, all of, you know, it was the combination of these factor, these multi, you know, factors that prohibited it.
The paper guys, the cotton guys, and the pharmaceutical guys.
Exactly.
So we mentioned Lilly, and you said Lilly, who had already been dealing in hemp-derived and cannabis-derived, you know, pharmaceuticals, when this takes place and they're killing this all off, they have their own private hemp field still, where they're still growing this, where they're still working on this?
Yeah, that I don't know.
Because that runs really deep at that point. That's where we could be like, okay, these guys are criminals, goddammit. You know?
There's just a lot of unanswered questions. And that's kind of why I've been so fascinated with trying to understand where we came from and why we're in the situation we are, because it didn't just happen. There were multiple concerted efforts to be able to limit what we know as cannabis.
I was going to say it kind of did just happen, because one day somebody went, hey, there's more money in making this just happen than letting it go on. You know,
that's true.
You know what I mean? And the more you dig, then it shouldn't be shocking that money and government and major corporations are all tied very close together. It's just so crazy when we look back at the history of this, and it happened in every state, literally every state. It's easy to say, well, it hit this state the hardest because they were growing the most or whatever, but even Nebraska had a history of this that I didn't know about, and digging into it blows my mind.
Absolutely. You know, Kansas also has a pretty unique history regarding prohibition just in general.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
We're the state of Carrie Nation, and
yeah.
And you know, we're also the free state. So there's just a lot of intersecting motives and intents that happen in Kansas.
So for a long time, and I mean when I say a long time, I mean like 30 or 40 years, Kansas is completely prohibitive on this, wants nothing to do with it. And at that same time, I remember there was a book that came out, I want to say late 90s, early 2000s. What is the problem, or what is the deal with Kansas? And it was all about how puritanical and conservative Kansas had become from going from a relatively liberal, you know, democratic state to just swinging as far right as possible. And you had like massive, like crazy prosecutions for marijuana, people thrown in prison, like the same that they would be for crack cocaine and whatnot. And now you guys, somehow Kansas has a legalized marijuana from a medical marijuana law, and Nebraska does not. What happened? I don't understand.
So actually Kansas is one of the final four to not legalize, and Nebraska is on the books to vote. And so they're actually a little bit further ahead than we are right now.
We do have a vote coming. So, we'll see.
Yeah, and it'll be I hope that it happens in Nebraska. They need it there, just like they do everywhere else. But the bottom line is with being surrounded 100%, the lawmakers in Kansas are going to be up against a lot of pressure, and they already have been. But to know that we are literally just exporting goods and money, revenue, all of this, it will have to stop eventually, and we can't continue down that path.
It seems very similar to a lot of the arguments that people had about gambling in states, where the neighboring state would have casinos and we don't. We're just losing all that money. But we're talking about the breadbasket of America here. And now farmers can't make the money that they used to on wheat, on soy, on corn, on any of this stuff. But hemp and marijuana, especially, all of a sudden farmers are seeing this and going, why aren't we doing something with this? You know, there's still a lot of ideas about it's a drug and it's bad, and there's old ideas based on that. But I think there's also more clarity now. How has Kansas changed? I mean, how have you seen it change in your lifetime? Because you grew up around the same time that I did, where we went through DARE, and now Kansas is looking at, you know, legalizing hemp for industrial usage and whatnot. Was this gradual? Have you guys been fighting the whole time? I mean, how did this change?
That's a great question. There has been a coalition in Kansas working over 10 years now on getting medicinal cannabis legalized. And it was in that movement that I identified that I really needed to kind of branch out and say, look, we need industrial hemp here, not more than anything, but for an ag-based state like Kansas. I mean, Kansas is ranked number three in the nation is in regards to farmable acreage per capita.
Yeah.
So our economy is driven by agriculture. And so you're right. When you've got markets that are tanking and have continuously gone down, and farmers at the same time are paying more for their inputs, for their acreage, it's not a good combination. And farmers have been suffering, I think, for quite a while, for several years. Of course, we had a horrible drought in 2012.
Yeah.
And from that, there's been a big effort of conservation and saving water and saving the aquifer and getting into regen ag and soil health and all of this. So there have been some really positive steps made to help mitigate a lot of the damage that's been done to monoculture.
Yeah,
ultimately,
absolutely.
And I've spoken to farmers out in Western Kansas that said we should have never introduced corn to Kansas because it's so water intensive.
Yeah, same with Nebraska. We became the corn husker state, and now we have a desert in our panhandle because of it. It's crazy.
It is, and the thing about it is, the majority of that corn, if not all of it, at least in grown in Kansas, isn't going to feed people.
No,
it's going to animal feed and ethanol, which yep. we know is a very expensive process for biofuel.
Right.
So there, it has been interesting to be able to go around the state. One of the really fortunate opportunities I had early on with Kansans for Hemp was we went around the state and we sat in the room with farmers. We answered their questions and heard their concerns about what this might mean to introduce or reintroduce another crop. And we took that information back. I provided testimony in the state house, and I was working with lobbyists and coalitions for industrial hemp, and we got it passed. I mean, once you have the crucial conversations and you are able to answer people's concerns legitimately,
right,
they see the different side of things. And I think that's been the paradigm shift over time.
Did the history help at all? Were you in those conversations? Did you go back and say, hey, look, we were growing this not long ago? Well, I'm not talking about, you know, even cowboy and Indian years. We're talking about, you know, 50, 60 years ago.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. We pulled out all the stops, and I think that's how we got it done. And of course, you know, power in numbers, that's how it happens. That's how you influence, especially lawmakers. And once they see the economic side of things, especially, but at the same time, we've got a handful of representatives from law enforcement agencies, for example.
Yes.
We know that their job is crucial. They are protecting our cities and serving our communities. And we feel like this is a perfect opportunity for them to help rebuild their totally. Their constituency. But at the same time, we've seen some lobbyists that are representing agencies that don't really have a full understanding of perhaps how their forces consider cannabis or hemp for that matter.
That is way more polite than I would have put it, by the way. But I totally hear you.
we're still hearing testimonies such as, well, if Kansas allows medical cannabis, it's going to make the state fall into mediocrity.
Right.
And it's just, these types of arguments don't hold weight.
Right.
Well, they just don't.
But I mean, you remember when Elvis created rock and roll, and then we just, you know, became a nation of sodomites and monsters, you know, like it's this old ridiculous thinking where you don't understand. It's already here. It is more pervasive now. And you are aiding a black market. That's all you are doing with these ridiculous arguments. And I mean, obviously this is a show about hemp, but I feel like it is impossible to talk about hemp without talking about marijuana or cannabis as well. And one of the biggest things that's holding Nebraska back right now from industrial hemp is our governor thinks marijuana is right up there with heroin. Like, they, you know, you smoke marijuana and then you're on PCP 2 days later, and then you're getting shot 16 times while you are running at the cops, you know. And it's just that insane thinking. You mentioned how we've got it on the ballot. We have a governor. We voted to get rid of the death penalty, and our governor said no and put it back in action. The people voted. So what happens when we vote and say, yes, we want medical marijuana use in Nebraska? He can say, no, veto, sorry. Won't do it. And the farmers want this. That's what's blowing my mind, is that the farmers need help and the state is not helping them, but they continue to vote for people that will hurt their own cause for reasons, like you said, fear the state will fall into mediocrity. What does that even mean? What does that mean? I would demand a definition of that. Like, mediocrity? We're Kansas, you know? We're already a flyover state for most people. Give me a break, you know? You were part of putting together this idea of legalizing medical marijuana in Kansas as well, right?
I have been helping the movement here, and I now advise the Kansas Cannabis Business Association as well. So, I was also fortunate to help co-author a bill that was introduced last year.
I saw that.
You know, unfortunately, there have been a lot of political games that people are playing, and that's why nothing happened last year. But we've got a pretty strong momentum going into this next session, so we're hoping that we're going to get it done in 2021.
That's excellent. And what is it? What's the temperature feel like? I mean, it sounds like the populace is behind this, and it sounds like Kansas is no longer the completely right-wing conservative state that it used to be. In fact, as from what I've heard, Kansas is actually considered like in play this year, and maybe it's just because the current administration has been so awful. I don't know, but... It has the political landscape, has it gotten easier to navigate? Are you dealing with, you know, just a few bumps in the road at this point?
Yeah, it's a definitely an interesting environment.
A sigh like that is never good, by the way. It's never followed by a happy story.
I will say that we're seeing some major changes, and it's happening on all levels of state government, of nonprofit organizations, of people who are operating in the state, as well as businesses wanting to come to Kansas. I've spoken with a couple different kind of big players that would love to come here. And if things were a little bit different policy wise, they may make the move. We do have some, I guess folks will say, you know, ultra conservative people. And what we've seen, I guess, from the federal side is there's a lot of divisiveness just in general in politics right now.
Sure.
And Kansas is not immune to that. No state is immune to that. But there is this sort of camaraderie that I've seen lawmakers follow through with, because we have to work together to make things happen. I mean, like that's the way things work. And right. I actually have kind of also a unique perspective about the state house, because having grown up in Topeka, I spent a lot of my formative years in the state house because my mother was the executive assistant to four different Senate presidents.
Oh, wow.
And so I understand and also very much appreciate the work that policymakers and grassroots advocate movements do. So,
and you didn't have a chance. This like this started for you at a very young age, and it was all over. Like, oh, I guess I'm a freedom fighter. Here we go.
It's in my blood.
There you go. Mom, dad are rodeo clowns. You'd be poking out of a barrel right now, you know? Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please finish.
No, I was just going to say this coming election is going to be very, very interesting, because I think we are going to see some seats flip both in the House and the Senate.
Oh, without a doubt.
Traditionally, our Kansas legislature has been very, very conservative, but it has gone back and forth throughout the years, and it also is kind of reflective of the governorship and the administration. Sure. But yeah, we're seeing some great movement. And I will also say that there was a political poll that just came out recently. And there is some strong candidates that are coming into the fold here in November. And we're also seeing a shift with people who are running for re-election, because they know there was a study done in 2019, over 76% of Kansans believe that medical cannabis should be legalized. So it's not, there's no party. This isn't black. Right. This isn't red or blue.
No.
It's bipartisan.
That's more than three quarters of the state. Now, which side of that argument should you be on if you want to get elected? I can't do that math, but it seems like the big number is the good one, right? This is the stuff that blows my mind. And as far as industrial hemp goes, you guys are producing now. Kansas is an industrial hemp state.
This is true. The bill was passed in 2018. 2019 was the first year that we were able to cultivate, of course, under the guise of the Kansas Department of Ag and the research program.
Right.
Which I was appointed to, and I sat on the Industrial Hemp Research Advisory Board under the Department of Ag. I was first, I was appointed by Secretary McClaskey, and then I was reappointed by Secretary Mike Beam. And that experience was so influential to me because I got to see how that program worked.
Yeah.
And I was part of the group that got to review all the licenses and we approved the licenses. I will say that 2020, we did see a decrease in licenses. And I think every state did for multiple reasons. But the Kansas Department of Ag did submit a commercial hemp program to USDA. It was approved. And now we're kind of just in this holding pattern until the legislature enacts it. And right. And at that point, we will venture down the path of a commercial program.
That's excellent. And hopefully by then, there's going to be more companies that are making fabrics, that are, you know, making plastic polymers, that are making hempcrete and whatnot, because there is so much money here. And again, like we said earlier, it's a weed. It grows really easily. It doesn't need the water. It doesn't need as many, you know, of the chemical compounds to keep pests away and whatnot. It's just, this is a win-win, and I hope Kansas figures it out. I hope Nebraska does too. Right now, the Midwest, we're supposed to be doing this. This is what we're supposed to be doing, you know, and I'm glad that we have freedom fighters like you out there. But again, it sounds like you had no choice. It sounds like you were born into this cult.
Well, I appreciate that. And I, you know, it's been an expansion, of course, and I'm so thrilled to be involved with this movement in multiple ways. And the fact that we have groups now, such as the Midwest Hemp Council and Ministry of Hemp and, you know, all of these the U.S. Hemp Roundtable. And
yeah.
And I now sit on the advisory board of the Hemp Economic Development Group, which was just formed based out of Chicago. And we're going to see some pretty exciting things happen within the next few months and years.
That's awesome. How many groups are you on now? I think you've mentioned 20 so far. You have free time, right? You stop every once in a while.
I try. Yeah, it's a handful.
Kelly, thanks again for joining me, man. This was fantastic. And I find it really interesting just also coming from a flyover ag state, these battles being fought, how different it is here than it is in states like even Kentucky or Oregon or California, who now, mind you, they're all bogged down in their own kind of government battles right now. But it seems like once we get this started, you will not be able to ignore the benefits. And those voices that held everyone back, they are going to be on the wrong side of history here. And I hope people remember that.
I agree. And, you know, Kansas was the number one producer of hemp bushels per acre. And that was in 1865, I believe.
That's a little while ago.
So it was a while ago. And, you know, our time is coming. It's inevitable.
Yeah, I totally agree. Huge thanks to Kelly for coming on the show. I love talking to people like that with so much passion and a serious mind for how to get this stuff done, too. It's amazing how many different groups this guy is working with. And of course, I'll have links to all of those in the show notes for this episode. Time to wrap things up on this episode, but there is still so much Ministry of Hemp stuff out there to keep you busy in the meantime. Head over to ministryofhemp.com and check out a couple of great articles we've got up right now. One is an update to our Vaping CBD Oil 101 article, which is fantastic because, as you heard, if you paid attention to the show or read the news, for a while there was some scares with vaping cannabis. Again, this had nothing to do with CBD, but we still wanted to make sure here at the Ministry of Hemp, we check everything out, and we've updated the article with some great information. Also, if you're having trouble sleeping, we've got a really good review posted about Healist Natural Sleep Drops. Check that one out too. I know I have had a lot of success with CBD and sleep recently. I'm a very light sleeper, and I find that if I dose before I go to bed, I have a real good night's sleep. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media, /Ministry of Hemp, @Ministry of Hemp. We're always posting cool stuff. We're always posting links to our new articles. And if you want to help us in finding new articles and writing new stuff, you can become a Ministry of Hemp insider over at Patreon. That's Patreon /Ministry of Hemp. It'll get you access to early articles, Patreon exclusive articles, Patreon exclusive podcast extras. Like, I've got a video of the Harney brothers, who I interviewed on our last episode, planting their hemp, and it's actually a pretty funny video. It's not quite as professional as a lot of the hemp farmers that I've talked to, but I think it's really cool to see that, yeah, you can just go out there, get your hands dirty, and plant this stuff. At the Ministry of Hemp, we believe that an accessible world is a better world for everybody, so we have a full written transcript of this episode in the show notes as well. Next time on the show, we are going to be talking about a new hemp children's book. You heard that right. It's a children's book about hemp, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. Be sure to tune in. But for now, I got to get out of here, and I like to end the show the same way every time by saying, remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will ya? This is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp, signing off.